back to the Mason Jar here on the Searcy Institute Podcast Network. I'm David Kern, and as always on the Mason Jar, I'm joined by Cindy Rollins. Cindy, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm busy, but doing well. It's a podcast day.
From podcast day,
top to bottom. We are here to answer some listener questions. We've got lots of interviews lined up, but we're going to intersperse those, give you interlude episodes. I don't know, whatever the word is. We are going to answer some questions. You are going to answer some listener questions in between. We have a question today about reading with little ones. That's always a popular topic. And then we're going to tag on to that a question about when you cooked for 11 people. Before we get to that, though, a quick word from our friends over at the Homegrown Preschooler. They are dedicated to providing books, curriculum, and educational tools for young learners. The latest brain research continues to confirm that beginning with a hands-on approach enables children to progress easily to more complex subject matter. So Homegrown gives you the tools to ensure that your children has a rich and enjoyable childhood while growing in knowledge and character as well. Their curriculum, which is called A Year of Playing Skillfully, provides everything you need to offer your young learner a complete early childhood education. Your child will be invited to discover an experience on a daily basis, delivering the necessary foundation for lifelong learning. This pre-planned, wonder-based curriculum offers parents the opportunity to relax and enjoy those precious first years without compromising the quality of their education. If you want to learn more about the Homegrown Preschooler or the program A Year of Playing Skillfully, you can head over to thehomegrownpreschooler.com. That's thehomegrownpreschooler.com. Okay, speaking of those early years, let's talk about reading with little ones. You know about this, you love this topic.
I know, that's a good topic.
This person who sent us the question is asking about those, you know, basically the preschool years before they're kind of in kindergarten. So ages 1 through 4 is what they specify. Did you have a favorite time of day for picture books with children that are this age? So we'll start with that. There's a couple follow-up questions that I'll bring into this, but just start right there. Do you have a favorite time of day for reading picture books with little ones?
Well, I did. I think there were a couple times during the day. I used to read a lot. Mostly I just sat and read, and that's what I did. But I think it's really great if you can, before morning time starts, if you can sit down with the little guys and read them a couple picture books, that's a good way to let them see that they're seen and heard and part of life. My little ones did come to morning time for the most part, but it was nice if we could gear something towards them first. So the big kids could be doing their math and I might be reading picture books to the little guys. Number two, you can have, if you're struggling to fit in picture books with your little guys and you have older students, you can assign every older student can read a picture book to a little guy each day. So that's one other way you can do that so that your little guys don't get pushed aside. And then the other way, which I thought was helpful, is right before nap time. And like I said, my kids took naps well into their college years. I always would sit down and try to read them a picture book before their nap times. And also before bedtime at night.
Did you find that for kids that age, sometimes it was harder to have specified carved out times for reading to them, as opposed to it would sort of happen because, oh, I'm trying to cook or I'm trying to do the laundry, so one of you read a book to him to keep him or her out of my hair. Did you find that happening a lot? And thus you had.
Yeah. I mean, definitely it got harder as the kids got older and I became more focused on, you know, trying to keep up with the older kids, it did become harder to read to the little ones. And that's why it really helps to bring in other people to do it at that point, because your life has changed. But I always enjoyed picture books. I did keep reading to the little guys myself most of the time. But that was something I enjoyed. I mean, there are people who don't enjoy picture books, so it's a little bit harder and you have to be a little more disciplined with yourself and finding that time. A lot of times after their nap is a good time for picture books, because you haven't quite started supper yet, or you've done it in the crock pot or something. You have a little lag in the afternoon. Well, we know there's never a lag, but let's just pretend technically there could be a little lag in the afternoon.
Theoretically.
Yeah. So there, yeah, theoretically, not technically. So that would be a great time. That's a great time to read picture books to the kids. Or if you have a tea time, you could read a picture book and then go to the tea table and sit down and have tea time with the little guys in that afternoon period of time. I think this would be one of those good places to think about how long it's going to take you to read a picture book, and to think of it in terms of, I don't need a chunk of change to sit down with my child and read a picture book. I really only need 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes at the most. Yeah. I'm going to sit. Could I just stop what I'm doing? I'm waiting for the boiling water on the spaghetti. Could I stop and read a picture book? Yes, I could. Did I do that all the time? No, I'm sure I didn't. I'm sure I didn't go around thinking, oh, look, this is, but I did keep reading to the little guys because I loved it so much. It's a little harder if you don't love it so much.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I will say, for us, our 2-year-old is I've said it before, he's an absolute insane person. and I know you've had multiple of those. And he's the kind of child who's, you know, he'd climb on everything. I mean, he's actually he's a very lovable little kid, but he's just, first of all, he's 2. Second of all, he's into everything and all over everything. And he's very physically capable. So our 7-year-old, and then our 5-year-old to a lesser degree, but as they've learned to read, it has kind of been a game changer. Mm-hmm. Just as far as getting through the day, because you can then, instead of you feeling like you're having to occupy them with nonsense, you can feel like you're accomplishing some goals by having them read to the little ones as well.
Yeah,
they're doing something valuable, both for the older ones because they're practicing their reading. So they're doing their reading work while also occupying your little one and giving them something
That's a perfect solution for so many things. I mean, that just works on so many levels.
And a lot of the times those picture books are, you know, if you have a 6-7-year-old who's learning to read, and they're great for not only for them to practice reading because it's at the age level, oftentimes, you know, they can read, but also there's a lot of times there's rhyming and there's verse going on, and they have to learn how to inflect and in a way that's not over their head, but also challenges them. So those are the perfect things, I think, for young readers to have to read anyway. So,
Yeah, it's interesting to hear a child read who inflects well. That always surprises me, and it's very delightful to hear when a child can read a story and it doesn't sound like a monotone sounding out of words.
Well, my kids are pretty good at that, and I there's probably some natural, like they're just naturally good at that, and we'll probably have the kids in behind them probably won't be as good at it, just because, you know, the odds. But the older ones are good at that, and I swear it's because of the amount of, I mean, they've got read to a lot, but my mom in particular does a lot of nursery rhymes with them. And there's a lot of poetry, and my wife has been good about reading poetry and having them memorize poetry. And I swear that's why it is. I don't think it's actually that I'm good at that or have taught them that. We've never spent any time teaching them that. I think it's really because of the amount of poetry and nursery rhymes that they've been. And I know you love nursery rhymes.
Actually, I need to talk to you about that. I need to schedule a guest. I got a message on my phone one day, and it was a voicemail from Coulter, who has asked he says he also knows some poetry. And if you'd like to bring him along one of these days, we'll have him. We'll have him on the podcast.
Well, that would make him probably too happy. So we probably should tell him, we should probably delay that and just constantly tell him, oh, we'll do it sometime soon.
Okay. That's a future hope for him.
we can't let him, you know, can't have him be too happy in his life. We've got to, you know, some delayed gratification sometimes.
Yes. I actually was driving. I couldn't hear it very well. And then somebody recalled it and I'm like, what? I think I had a really cool message on my phone that disappeared.
Yeah. It's a little disturbing how he has learned to send these messages, but see, it's when he's with my mom. Grandma lets them use the phone. Okay, let's keep going here. We got another follow-up question. With little children, was there a specific time in the day that you set aside for art and hands-on things? You know, Play-Doh type stuff, playing in the dirt, I assume. And even, I mean, that's where the homegrown preschool, a lot of their stuff is very based in. They have water-based stuff and, you know, all that. It's very hands-on. Did you set aside a specific time for that, or did you just kind of let it happen?
I did not set aside a specific time for that. I was very bad about handcrafts, handy work stuff. I see people doing that now and I really admire it. I love the homegrown preschoolers, all their water, all their little things. And if I had something like that, I like to think maybe I would have set aside time to do that, especially with the preschoolers. I did do preschool stuff with my preschoolers. It very rarely included handcrafts or handiwork, that sort of thing. My husband did a few more of those kind of things with the boys. They did some woodworking and bird feeding and things like that. My hands-on with my kids was go outside and play. Well, I didn't even tell them to go outside and play. It was more like stop making you do something, then you are outside and playing. So I was not very good at that. I've seen some beautiful work that young kids have done. Dawn Duran sends me pictures of the handcrafts her children are doing. You know, that was a weakness that we had. I didn't like math manipulatives and my kids didn't seem to like them. I had done some crafts like cross stitch and things like that before I had kids, but I'm not a handcraft person. And my kids were never like, just, oh, we want to do this. We want to do this. Yeah. So we didn't.
For the moms who are very crafty, I assume that that's going to come second nature for them.
Yeah.
So it sounds like in some ways you kind of wish that you had done more. But for people who maybe like you don't feel as confident in that area or just are naturally inclined towards that, do you have any advice for how to actually fit that in? I mean, would you just rely on something like homegrown or do you think that just, you know, playing outside is just as good?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine if you don't. I'm going to say that now. Two of my kids, I just was talking to Christopher the other day, and he was saying, yeah, well, I'm not going to brag about one of my kids, but he was saying, you know, everybody respects him because he's really good at engineering. He was talking about another one of my sons in his workplace. And I'm like, what? He is? I mean, he wasn't like one of those kids where you thought, oh, he wants to make things. He's going to be an engineer. But he's good at that. And and Christopher himself is in an engineering type of career. So it's really interesting that, I mean, they made stuff on their own. It was just that we didn't do a lot of the homeschool, preschool type things. But I do think... Right. Having it available the way it is like that in the kits or she makes it very easy. So the other thing is my grandkids, they get on YouTube, and which is probably a recipe for disaster on one level. And since I'm not savvy about it, so I don't know the dangers, but we sat there the other day and watched how to make a bunch of Halloween crafts, pumpkin crafts, basically. That they were called 5-minute crafts. They look like they would take me hours and hours, but
yeah, careful to be making slime next.
Yes, exactly. So there are, I mean, obviously people have options for that nowadays. And so maybe just saying, well, we're going to do, you know, take 5 minutes to do that. But will they be okay if you don't? I mean, I think so. It seems like they're okay. But I would definitely do it. I do think there's a lot of value in it.
I bet that the amount of time that your boys spent playing outside, they probably were digging holes and building tree houses and playing and figuring out how to put a fort together. I bet a lot of that fed into engineering skills. There just becomes natural, you know, the natural abilities come out in ways that you maybe wouldn't have seen.
I mean, they would kill a deer eventually and, you know, just bring it home and find a way to cook it outside. I mean, it was, they definitely had skills.
Well, hey, 100 years ago, that's how you survived. So,
yeah. So they built teepees and all sorts of things like that, that I had nothing to do with. Maybe just giving them free time, depending on the child. Some kids probably really, really enjoy having something in their hand that they made. I could see the value in that.
Okay, one more question about reading. And we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to go on to one other question. Did you only keep one fun, quote, fun read going at a time? And then what did you do with that read if somebody was like out because of a birthday or they were sick or had an appointment or whatever it was? So, and I suppose the fun read thing applies to both the little kids, but then also the reading aloud and your children's own personal reading.
For the most part, for morning time, we had one fun read. And then, but many times we were also reading another book in the evenings. Most years we had, so we didn't have TV in the evening. So we would read aloud in the evenings. So we did usually have two fun reads going at different times of the day.
Is that when your husband read?
Yes, he did read a lot in the evening. Most of the books, all the books he read aloud in the evening. The thing is, it gets very conflicting because as your children grow up they start going places. If just one person was gone, I would just wait. And I waited and waited and waited for years. I would not want to go ahead on a book if someone wasn't there. But we were almost always all together. Later, as high schoolers started driving and getting jobs and going places and doing things, it killed me to stop waiting for people. It killed me to say, we're just going to go ahead without this person. But of course, now I look back, that's inevitable because they are going to grow up and go away. You might as well get used to reading, going ahead without them. And you can always assign a child who was gone. They could read the chapter later if they really need to, or the other kids can narrate and tell them what happened. Mm. It's hard to do that, but it's probably best just to keep moving and not wait for people who aren't there because it's only going to get worse.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, one more question before we get to that, though. I want to say a quick word from Jennifer Pepito and Peaceful Press. You heard Jennifer on the podcast last week when Cindy interviewed her. Do you want to educate your children according to Charlotte Mason ideals and yet struggle with knowing where to start? Well, I suspect that you are not alone. The Peaceful Press has developed parent guides that make a Charlotte Mason education step-by-step for your family. So they include literature, art, poetry, copywork, and discussion prompts in order to make a transition to Charlotte Mason homeschooling simple and joyful. Spreading the feast of a Charlotte Mason education is possible, and their resources can help. So you can visit Peaceful Press over at www.thepeacefulpress.com to download a free sample. And then you can use code MASONJAR for 20% off any purchase there. Again, that is thepeacefulpress.com and the code is MASONJAR to get 20% off your purchase. So I just want to say thanks you to Jennifer once again for being on the show and for this offer to our listeners. Again, once more time, that's thepeacefulpress.com.
Yeah, that was a good interview. She's a great girl and I know her stuff is very wonderful.
Yeah, so that's pretty great that she's offering the code and there's a free sample you can download over at her website. All right, last question here. When did you cook?
When did I cook?
This person says, we know about your cleaning. And she says, I think this is a lie. Your house is very clean. So apparently this is someone who's been to your house.
Oh, yeah, there you go. My house is very clean. I want that. I want everybody
it's been publicly stated. But she says, when did you cook for 11? So you've got all the homeschool stuff that you're doing and trying to keep your house. And so a friend of ours who listens to this show, I believe, she was saying at church the other day that as a mom, she feels like she's got a number of jobs that she's responsible for. She's responsible for being a mother and she has a baby. She's responsible for being a homeschool mom, for doing the teaching. She's responsible for housekeeping. She's responsible for being a cook and she's responsible for being a wife. And she feels like she can only do like two of those things very well on a good day, I think is what she said. Maybe three on a good day, but most of the time she feels like she can only do two of those. So I think that relates to this question. So you have all these different roles as a mom, as a teacher, as a wife. How did you find the time to cook? Did you have strategies? I mean, obviously there's the crock pot, but you use the crock pot every day. And still that's even getting the crock pot prepped for 11 people probably had to have been quite a job.
Yeah, I'm someone who you could say I'm a good cook for special occasions and I have great recipes for holidays and that sort of thing. It was hard for me to cook every day. And of course, I had to cook every day. We were in a co-op for years and years and years. So, you know, a lot of our food revolved around, you know, the co-op foods and what was available and getting good prices on beans and things that were. Now, my kids do, to this day, they're not, they don't love beans. And so I never could rely on beans as much as most large families. I had some basic recipes. I had some rotation recipes. My mom, when she grew up, I didn't do this, but it always sounded like a great idea. Like every Wednesday night, they had spaghetti. They had only 7 meals a week. Only 7 meals. And every week, they just rotated. Now, this was obviously growing up in the 40s and 50s. But you know, I didn't do that. I definitely had to cook. I used a lot of filler. I always had to have some sort of bread,
like rice.
Some sort of, rice, potatoes, rolls, biscuits. Every meal I had some kind of homemade bread generally because I had to make it from scratch just to be able to afford it. Mm. For years, I didn't even buy a loaf of bread. To tell the truth, I was in a group of people when I did have a co-op that were teaching a lot of crazy things about what you eat and how spiritually significant it was. And this was not, these people were not saying, oh, feasting is a spiritual thing. They were basically saying that bread had to be homemade and you had to bake all your own bread, which is great. I mean, it tastes fantastic. But your salvation really does not rest on it. So finally, after all those years of baking my own bread,
that's a hot take.
I started to move away from that. First of all, because it was causing my weight to soar. So one day I was in the grocery store and I thought, I'm going to buy a loaf of bread. So I go over to the bread aisle and I haven't been over there in years. And this is just to show you how really weird old timey homeschoolers were. And I'm looking around and I look around to see if there's anybody in the grocery store who might see me at the evil bread rack. And I bought a loaf of bread and it's been, you know, all downhill from there. eventually I had to give up bread altogether. But anyway, so.
Like everybody else.
I just had to cook. I mean, I just had to do something. I made a lot of soups, a lot of one pot meals, you know, a pot of chili and some cornbread or a soup and a roll and that's, you know, meat, vegetable salad. We did garden for several years where we had big giant gardens and we had lots of vegetables and people always gave us things from their gardens. So we always had fresh vegetables.
They felt sorry for you.
Summer. Yeah, they did. We were the charity case for all boy clothes in the world went to my house to the point where it was ridiculous. And all zucchini in the world came to our house.
So many people are so gung-ho about growing zucchini, but nobody ever seems to eat the zucchini they grow.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
I make zucchini bread that actually has 2 cups of sugar and like 2 cups of oil in it. It's so really awful for you. I don't even know. I guess the zucchini is just a way to make it you not feel guilty when you eat it. It was
like
given to
bread.
Me by an Amish lady. There's so much guilt in that bread, but the zucchini helps.
It's green guilt.
Yeah. So, and I would put zucchini in spaghetti sauce. I did every trick in the book, but.
Did you?
Yeah, I did cook at one point.
What do you mean at one point? You don't cook anymore?
Not much.
Do you, did you cook begrudgingly during those years? Did you find yourself, I don't know, being grumpy about cooking?
Sometimes I think I did because I never got over the fact that my mom wasn't going to cook dinner. It was like, that was her job. I don't know when it became my job to feed all these hungry people. But I liked cooking. I really, really, it wasn't that I didn't like cooking because I really did. And I liked eating and I liked cooking for my family. But I always had so many weight problems that I had a very uneasy relationship. It was just easier for me not to eat than to have to wrestle with just eating the right amount, you know, and not eating too much. And, you know, when you're fixing, you know, fattening foods for boys because they actually are hungry and they need something to eat. Then it's really hard to control your weight. So I had an uneasy relationship with food, but I just cooked for them all those years. And I don't think I begrudgingly cooked. It was frustrating at the end of the day to be like, what? I'm the one who has to do this, you know?
Did you have a system for getting it done? I mean, were you choosing the recipes days before and then sticking to that? Were you?
I mean, I did a lot of different
3 p.m.
things.
Every day, or you just kind
of? I did a lot of planning. I used to do cooking planning just like school planning. I would sit down with all the cookbooks and, you know, write out the recipe for so long, go to the store, and I mean, our grocery bill was unbelievably high. It was expensive. It was our single biggest expense, even bigger than our mortgage, or even, you know, even our mortgage and our heat and our power. It was very expensive to feed our family, and most of our money went towards that. So, so I would do a lot of planning, and I couldn't afford really the highest quality foods. We weren't eating steak, and we are. Now we don't even notice that we spend so much money on groceries, that, you know, we buy high quality food and it doesn't even seem expensive because it's so much less money than what
context, right?
Yeah,
perspective. Andrew, wait, no, which one's home? Alex. Alex must, like, the older boys must think he's like living like a king now. He's like the prince of the palace now that they're
used to go to the drive-thru, we'd say, you know, the rule was everybody got water. There was never a drink involved, ever. We could never afford that. One time McDonald's actually refused to fill our order. They said that we had ordered too many hamburgers and it was not legal to order that many. So my husband was like, well, we could send each of our kids through the line one at a time. Do you want us to do that? And they said, yeah, because we're not going to give you more than 10 hamburgers.
And, really?
Yeah, that happened. But it was a sale, like, of hamburgers, and we were just buying our normal amount. But to them, it was like we were trying to, like, take advantage of them. But anyway, you could probably take that out if you need to. But
That's a good story. That needs to be like a movie or something.
So now I go with Alex to the drive-thru, and we get to go to Chick-fil-A, which, you know, we couldn't have ever gone to Chick-fil-A with our.
Kid could have had a nugget.
Yeah, right. So now we go and I'm like, do you want a Coke? Do you want a milkshake? And Alex is just loading up on whatever he wants. And thankfully he's not a spoiled kid at all. Yeah. I mean, I think there's benefits, and there's also, he doesn't have, you know, the brothers and sisters at home that his other siblings did. Yeah. So there's downfalls and benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. Like anything, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, I know the cooking thing that's a real question. You know, it probably doesn't get, I don't know, maybe it gets talked about among moms more than I know, because I obviously don't really know what gets talked about among moms. But I feel like that's something that I do a lot of cooking for us, and I find it very stressful at times. And I love cooking. I really love it. And yet I'm stressed at the thought of what are we going to do when I get home from work, or what do I need to shop for now this week? I do a lot of our shopping and cooking, and because I love it. But then I sometimes I'm like, what have I got myself into?
Well, you're in it now. That's your job, and you're not getting out of it. I'll just tell you for Bethany
I should have really, you know, not built that expectation in like 9 years ago or whatever.
You're supposed to, if you don't want to do something, you have to pretend like you can't do it. You don't know how to do it. And like, what? You buy milk?
My dad succeeded at that really well.
Yes. It's funny.
We used to go to the store. He used to take us to the store very rarely, to the grocery store. And it was such a weird experience. And I never knew if he was faking not knowing where things were in the grocery store and making it take so long, or I couldn't tell if it was on purpose and being strategic, or if it really was like he was thinking about something lofty and he didn't know where the milk, you know? Yes.
That's a good question. I remember at a restaurant once, when you were there and your dad was there, they came to ask your dad what we were going to drink, and that your dad was like, I don't know. And I was like, I think you need to go over and talk to David.
Yeah, it's funny. My mom always wondered, she said something to me one time, like, enjoyment of cooking and like diving into that and the shopping and all that, was that like a version of rebellion?
Yes.
Or was it, I just have a different temperment or something. So let's go with the different
temperament. Yeah, that was your way of rebelling against your dad was, yeah. He can't go grocery shopping, but I can.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I don't think I needed to find new ways to be rebellious, but anyway. Yeah,
I did one time do that whole thing where for a few years we did that, like make 30 meals all at one point, but yeah, that was.
Then I don't know. There's too much like deciding. Somebody doesn't want that meal, and then it just becomes a whole thing. I don't know.
Oh yeah, you've made like five of these things, and everybody hates it, and then you know it comes back around. But what happened with us was we went on vacation, we came back, and our freezer door had been left open, and I lost like 30 of those meals. And
it's
after
not even
that,
the food's
I could
gone.
Not
it's
do it again.
Labor.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I just could not do it again. I was just after that.
That sounds like my nightmare. Well, one of my nightmares. Anyway, Cindy, as always, thank you. Do you have any final thoughts on any of this?
No, I don't.
All right.
Thanks, well, Rochelle, for the questions.
Yeah, so thanks to her. Thanks to Homegrown for sponsoring. And again, that's thehomegrownpreschooler.com if you want to learn about their program, A Year of Playing Skillfully. And then, of course, thanks to Jennifer and the Peaceful Press. If you want to get access to that download, it's at thepeacefulpress.com, and that's a free download. It's a free sample. And then you can also use the code MasonJar for 20% off any purchase from their store. Again, that's thepeacefulpress.com, and the code is MasonJar. So thanks to both of them for supporting the show and for their offerings to our listeners. I guess that's it. Thanks to for sending in the questions. And if you want to send in a future question to us, you can do that on the Mere Motherhood Facebook group, or you can email Cindy or I. Cindy is at cindy@ordo-amoris.com, and I'm david@cerseinstitute.com. So many of these podcasts today. Okay, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. For Cindy and for all of us here at Cersei, I'm David Kern. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.